This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Hello and welcome to this week's show of Property Matters. I'm Greg Watson and you're listening to Property Matters on MPR Manawatu People's Radio. Te reo, irirangi o ngā tangata o Manawatu. So lovely to have your company this week, and for those of you who are joining on podcast, appreciate that too. We've got a bit of a mixed bag of property-related matters this week, and that's always a bit of fun to jump around. The first article headline caught my attention. This was by Kylie Klein-Nixon on stuff.co.nz. It says, own property and capital for 100,000K. Sorry, that's not correct. Let's start that again. 100,000K, how much is that? That's $100 million. That's not quite right. So own a property, that's a disturbing headline for another reason. So the headline is, own property and capital for 100K. But there's a catch. So for $100,000, you can get a property in Wellington. So what is the catch? So it may not be the perfect property that you've always dreamed of, but this garage in Sydney Street West and Thorndon, Wellington, could be the opportunity to get into the capital's lucrative parking market. Built by Wellington City Council sometime in the 1930s, the 17 square metre space is one of a row of garages that sits underneath Bowen Street. So if you live in Wellington, it's possible you've driven over them without even knowing that they're there. The number 9 belongs to David and Fran. We've agreed not to use their last names due to David's public-facing role. But David bought the garage about 22 years ago when he was living in a vintage cottage on nearby Ascot Street in the heart of Wellington's heritage precinct, without a car park. So he paid about $50,000 for the garage. When the couple had children, they sold the property and moved to the hut. But as they both worked in the city, they kept the garage for the commute. We used to use it for commuting daily, says Fran. We both worked on the terrace, so it was ideal. No worries about parking. It's true. The park was also useful on weekends for shopping or in the evenings for events. It's a 20-minute walk or a 6-minute Uber from Sky Stadium and about the same to the TSB Arena. The Beehive and the start of Lambton Quay are about a 5-minute walk away. When I was going overseas, I parked in the garage and took the bus to the airport and back. It was really convenient just coming out Bowen Street to the garage with my suitcase. So there we go, lots of positives. Row garages such as these, unattached to specific buildings, are not uncommon in Wellington, where many homes were built before the mid-30s, when motor cars became more commonplace. It's not clear if these garages are built purely to accommodate council vehicles or for the use of homes on Ascot Street or Sydney Street West. They now have a body corp which deals with insurance and maintenance. Fran says most of the units are owner-occupied with a mix of uses including storage, but it's not permitted to live in them. At a certain point, somebody did try and live in one, apparently. That didn't last long. It would have to be pretty bleak. They're just useful and well-located. If you happen to be commuting in particular, it's a boon for us. So over that time, it was interesting to see the price of the garage has risen. So it's sort of an investment, really. The garages in this part of town coming onto the market are rare, says Ray White agent Luke Mahoney. Garages in this row have achieved prices between $104,000 and $119,000 in the past 3 years. They have a rating value of $100,000, so it's interesting to see where they sell. He's even holding an open garage on Thursday. So that's quite funny, as opposed to an open home. So there we go. So just shows you the value of a car park. Very interesting. There was one, the record for a single car park, incidentally, is in the Key Regency apartment building in Key Street in Auckland. That one sold for $265. Oh, actually, no, there was one in the Pacifica building in Auckland in 2021, sold for $288. Amazing, amazing. So it's just a little piece of land, 17 square metres, central city, convenient. So there we go. Right, speaking of buying and selling, what's been happening lately? There's been a lot of people focusing on the relationship between inflation coming down, the banks lending, and the OCR. So let's look at this article by Brianna Micklewraith on stuff.co.nz. It says, major banks drop some lending rates. Some of the country's major banks have dropped their lending rates as economists look forward or look ahead to next week's official cash rate announcement. BNZ, Kiwi Bank and ASB all announced drops in different lending rates on Tuesday. Kiwi Bank dropped a number of its term deposit rates by 10 and 20 basis points, while a number of home loans rates dropped 30 basis points. ASB lowered the rates of multiple fixed home lending terms. Its 18-month rate dropped by 20 basis points, that's 0.2%, in case you're wondering what I'm meaning by that, to 6.49. Its two-year rate fell to 6.25. Now, the 3 and 4 year terms dropped 36 and 30 points respectively and were now 5.99. BNZ has made some updates to its term deposit rate and the fixed housing rates, and its standard fixed housing rate dropped 40 basis points, that's 0.4%, to 6.59. Now, these don't sound like very big changes, but actually they are, depending on the size of your mortgage and, I guess, the what's coming out of your household budget. So these drops come as economists are predicting rate cuts will come by the end of the year. So they're just trying to get ahead of the competition, so to speak. The BNZ chief economist Mike Jones said growing calls offshore that the US Federal Reserve needed to get cracking on lowering interest rates has further fanned speculation the Reserve Bank will do the same in New Zealand. He says markets now expect a full 1% to be lopped off the Reserve Bank's cash rate by year end, with the first cut fully priced for this month's meeting. This is contributing some large falls in New Zealand wholesale interest rates. The next announcement is actually on the 14th of August, so you might be listening to this after that. But this article, again by Brianna McCullrath, says, what can we expect from next week's OCR announcement? So next Wednesday, at the time of recording this, or tomorrow at the time in which you're listening to this, what can be expected? Kiwi Bank economist Jared Kerr described the Reserve Bank meeting as the economist's Super Bowl. It's good to see they get excited about these things. It's quite nice. Good on them. Overly restrictive monetary policy has inflicted much pain and tamed the inflation beast, he said. Households and businesses are struggling. Almost all data have come out of the weaker side of expectations and well below Reserve Bank of New Zealand estimates. Unemployment is rising swiftly and confidence in the economy remains at recessionary levels. It's been 2 years of recession. Kerr said Kiwi Bank economists recommend a cut next week, followed by a cut at every meeting until the cash rate hits 2.5%. Neutral is around 2.75%, according to the Reserve Bank of New Zealand. We need to get back to a neutral, no longer restrictive setting, and if anything, we need a bit of stimulus. But even under this scenario, more cuts are priced into the market near term. We would recommend 75 basis points by November. So again, if some of that follows through to lending and mortgage lending, it means more money into the pockets of households. They're not convinced they're going to pull the trigger next week, but that's a bit of a guide there as well. BNZ economists are forecasting a 25 basis point change, and Westpac, in this article, they haven't put a number on it, although I'm sure they have behind the scenes. It's, but at least they have. They think that so Westpac thinks that by the end of the year, they expect it to be at 5% and then 4.5% for the OCR in 2025. So that's 0.75 of cuts. So we'll see where that goes. It's all the big giant balancing act of finances. This one from Scoop Politics. Scoop is the independent news channel. It says, new research shows modest investment could significantly boost housing development. So the New Zealand Initiative has released a new research note examining how to implement revenue sharing between central and local government, a policy think tank has advocated for since 2013, and which government has now committed to pursue. The research note, titled Revenue Share for Housing, explores options for councils to receive a portion of tax revenue from new housing developments, addressing New Zealand's persistent housing shortage. Our research shows that by redirecting, for example, just 1.4% of its tax revenue, central government could boost local council budgets by 11.3%, said Nick Clark, senior fellow at the New Zealand Initiative and author of the research note. This relatively small shift in funds could create a powerful incentive for councils to say yes to new homes. Concept is simple. When new houses are built, the government shares some of the resulting tax revenue with the local council. This creates a virtuous cycle where more housing leads to more funding for local services and infrastructure. There are several ways to structure revenue sharing, Clark explained. Our analysis shows that some methods are more effective than others at encouraging housing development. The key is to ensure a clear link between new homes and increased council funding. The research suggests that basing payments on new building consents or completed builds could provide the strongest incentives for council. That's an interesting idea there. The article does go on, but that's good to see that people are thinking outside the square around where things are going, etc. So what's happening with the market in general? Let's see if I can find some information here. Oh, before we do, actually, just staying on this topic of, the housing crisis, this article from the Spinoff from just yesterday, is the housing crisis National's biggest threat? So Housing Minister Chris Bishop is making the case for affordable housing to New Zealand Party members and beyond, framing the housing crisis as an existential threat to the centre-right. Is the threat real? And Gabby Lardies assesses the evidence. She says, if I wanted to make loyal National supporters' heartbeats quicken, I'd show them exactly what Chris Bishop did on Sunday at the National Party AGM. On the pull-down projection screen at the Dewdrop Event Centre in Auckland, he first showed a neat, mundane graph of New Zealand home ownership rates plummeting from 73% in 1986 to 65% in 2017. So far, the Hearts kept their steady rhythms. Then a black slide with a little National Party logo on the corner boldly announced declining rates of home ownership is the greatest threat to the centre-right worldwide. Surely this dramatic statement raises a few pulses and eyebrows, but is it true and does it apply here? Well, somewhat unexpectedly, Bishop has made more progressive statements on housing since the Coalition took office than any minister in decades. In June, he went as far to say that the house prices should continue to drop, even if it made homeowners nervous, words that haven't been uttered by a Labor MP in decades. Bishop's made the case for making housing more affordable on three fronts: to boost the economy, to help get the government books back in order, and then the moral case that people shouldn't have to live in emergency housing and that it's an issue of intergenerational equity. Now he's dialing it up. Our housing crisis is a threat, one that will affect the National Party. So Bishop's presentation proceeded to use data from this year's election in Britain as a warning to the National Party here. Using a sample of 35,000 voters, YouGov, an international research data and analysis tech group, looked at how people voted across age, gender, education, income, employment, housing tenure, and previous votes. So renters, generally young people of 18 to 25, and people who lived with family or friends had extremely low levels of voting for the centre-right Conservative Party. The National Party's British equivalent gained the most votes among retired people and homeowners. So the article goes on to talk about that the housing is potentially a problem for the National Party. So it goes into quite a lot of data here, but it certainly shows there that renters and non-homeowners are the ones that tend to vote for the left, and that could have a definite effect if National doesn't get on top of it. So there we go, extra incentive for National to do what it needs to do to get things under control. Another issue here in this article from propertynoise.co.nz says that rents are killing renters from ever getting ahead. This is sort of on the same or similar theme. This is an article here that gives an example where, I'll just read it verbose. Hayley Mueller lives on Auckland's West Harbour with her husband and their three children. They pay $665 a week in rent, which Mueller considers a great deal compared to the other rentals I've looked at, which were around $850. Mueller cares for their nine-month-old baby and their 6 and 3-year-old boys. In the winter, heating the home costs about $250 a month. Groceries are $300 a week, and childcare is $220. 30% of their weekly household income goes towards rent. We can't necessarily look forward to saving a whole lot before buying our own home, so that's something that you struggle with if you're renting, Mueller says. How much money do you have left to actually save to buy your own place? And while they're okay with renting for now, it is unsettling being at the mercy of someone else. This is their sixth home in 6 years. It's nerve-wracking for us. The last time it was around Christmas, and you have to start manifesting a sense of trust that it's going to be okay, because it's really scary not knowing if you're going to have a home to live in. We actually moved out of that house on the day that we had to. Mueller says they love their rental, but being renters means uncertainty hangs over them and they never feel fully settled. There is always an inherent fear that the landlord, well within their rights, will decide to sell, and particularly so at the moment. Hayley is part of a growing trend of New Zealanders who do not own their own homes, and home ownership in New Zealand has dropped below 60%, according to a recent report by Deloitte, commissioned by Westpac, the lowest rate in about 80 years. The report reflects Mueller's reality, outlining how half of renters spend more than 30% of their income on rent. And from my experience and where rents have gone in the last few years, I certainly see that that's probably not unusual. They go on to talk about a communications student, Imani Sadiq. The Mount Albert five-bedroom flat she's lived in since April of last year swallows up almost 40% of her income. She's only just become eligible for a student allowance due to immigrating from the UK. Previously, she worked up to 20 hours a week to make ends meet, but now the budget is a little bit more flexible, so they go on there. So I guess the message there is that more people are renting, and those that are renting are finding it harder to get ahead with buying a home. The challenge around that, as I mentioned, for politics, is that whoever is in government needs to be addressing these things, particularly that with national, with that sway that more voters demographically who are renting and don't own their own homes tend to vote to the left. So that's something that they really need to get on top of. So it sees the, I guess the difficulties continue with regards to the prices and house prices and where it's going. Sorry, I was just getting my computer there to move forward a bit. And we'll look at this from two perspectives. The first article by Susan Edmonds of Radio New Zealand talks about Auckland, but then there's an article later from CoreLogic that talks about the rest of the country. The headline here is Auckland property, 44% of apartments sell for a loss. So Auckland apartment owners are taking losses in increasing numbers, new data shows, even when they've owned their units for a while. CoreLogic has released its latest pain and gain report, which shows the proportion of all properties being sold for more than they were bought for has dropped from 93.3% in the first quarter of the year to 92.1% in the second quarter. It's not a big change, but it is the lowest figure since the third quarter of 2015. Of apartments, 35% were sold for less than they bought for, and the highest proportion since 2012. In Auckland, 44% of apartment sales were for a loss. CoreLogic chief property economist Kelvin Davidson said the apartments that were sold for a loss were held for longer than across all types of property. Apartments that made a loss were held for a median of 4.2 years, compared with 2.7 years across all the sales that lost money. The Auckland market did slow to a stop in terms of apartments somewhat earlier than the rest of the country was affected by those changes when the market was reduced. The median resale loss of an apartment, where they were lost, money was lost, was $50,500 compared to a median loss of $50,000 for standalone houses. So we're only talking about houses that and apartments that sell at a loss. So we'll move across to the CoreLogic article here, which is referred to on interest.co.nz. And this says, almost 8% of all June quarter residential sales were made at a loss, with 35% of apartment sales loss-making. So CoreLogic found that 7.9% of residential sales in the second quarter were made at a loss, up from 6.7% in quarter one. In the main centres, Auckland properties were most likely to make a loss with 12.6% of sales, so it's just over 1 in 10 making a loss, fetching prices lower than the price they were previously purchased for, followed by Hamilton at 9.7%, Tauranga 8.8%, Wellington 6.7%, Dunedin 5.2% and Christchurch 4.3%. So these are generally situations where people have purchased at the peak of the market and then needed to sell as interest rates have gone up, for example. So among the provincial centres, Palmerston North has the highest percentage of loss-making sales at 13.2%. Sad. Followed by Whangarei at 11.2% and Nelson at 10.1%. So that's just something where it can be somewhat soul-destroying. There are extreme cases as well. I brought one to you here on the show a number of weeks ago where somebody had had to sell at a loss, which then absorbed or destroyed their original deposit, so therefore they could not buy again. So what they're talking about here as well is the gross loss on price, averaging $51,000 for those people who have had to sell below, but the average loss is probably more than that when you consider agents' fees and legal fees. So that's something that will change, particularly so if these interest rates come down. and price competition increases and house prices start going up again. So it's a rather temporary thing, but still. This seems to be the bad news property show today. The last two articles I've got here are unfortunate circumstances. And this first one, this should be under the category of have you checked your insurance policy lately, says house slips off moving trailer and completely blocks a Northland road. You may have seen this one on the news, potentially. I'm reporting it from Stuff by Ryan Anderson. They show a picture with the subtitle, an entire house is blocking the road in Kaiwaka in Northland, having partially slipped off a moving trailer while in transit. So some of you may have seen this in progress, a truck moving a house. It's always very impressive to see. Very impressive. So according to police, the Kaiwaka-Mungawai road was completely blocked by the house. The moving home slipped off the trailer in the morning, they said, and the road was blocked for about 8 hours. Photos show the house leaning heavily on one side, completely off the trailer. The trailer, labelled oversized, can be seen parked further up the road. It's got some interesting pictures here. And there's even a picture from a distance where you can see this house on a road. It's just bizarre. There's no truck that you can see, just a house sitting in the middle of the road. So they put diversions in place. There's no injuries, but that's really, really unfortunate. Now, I believe that part of the cost of literally moving a house is made up of insurance, but that is something to check out, as homes have so many components, so many parts, weight distribution, etc., that once in a blue moon, this sort of thing does happen. Don't let it happen to you. Finally, I found this article on oneroof.co.nz. I've been around a wide variety of websites this week. It says, are 1,576 new homes heading to the scrap heap. Full list of developments on hold at Kaiangaura. This article shows a beautiful picture of a 301 dwelling social housing block on the former Arlington Apartments site in Mount Cook, which is the largest development on hold and under review. And it looks really cool, the artist's plans. Sort of shops and offices at ground level, apartment-type buildings above. So let's see what this article is about. The future of 21 large-scale social housing developments aimed at solving the country's housing crisis hangs in the balance and could be canned. They are among the 2,168 consented but uncontracted social houses due to be completed after June 2025 that are now being reviewed. Kaiangaura said some would go ahead, but if they weren't found to be financially viable or in a priority location, they could be redesigned, repurposed, or the site sold off. The full list of Kaiangaura's large social housing projects, which have 30 or more houses planned in a single development that are on hold, was released to One Roof last week under the Official Information Act. There are 21 projects in Auckland, Wellington, Palmerston North, Hamilton and Napier that would have provided an additional 1,576 more affordable homes. Now, I'm not sure, because I haven't seen what OneRoof is looking at, I'm not quite sure which developments in Palmerston North those ones are. But they were put on hold in May after a damning review into Kaiangaura that found the country's biggest landlord was underperforming, not financially viable, and the governance from the board lacking. Housing Minister Chris Bishop then confirmed Kaiangaura would not be given any more operating funding to grow its social housing portfolio, but allocated $140 million towards funding 1,500 new social housing places to be provided by community housing providers. The largest Kaiangaura development with a big question mark around it is the planned social housing development with 301 houses in the former Arlington Apartments site in Mount Cook, the one that's pictured on this article. It's first announced in 2022 and promised to solve the capital city's housing crisis by providing homes for about 900 people at the cost of $296 million. The next largest is a social housing complex on Jordan Ave and Mount Smart Road in Onehunga, Auckland, which had a mix of 186 terraced houses and apartments and is the biggest of the 12 big state housing projects also on hold in the city. The 62 old state houses previously on the new site have been bowled to make way for the new development. Three developments in Palmerston North total 160 houses. much needed, two in Hamilton totalling 107, and 130 dwelling development in Napier and another 80 dwelling development in Wellington have also been halted. Out of the 21 projects, the 60-house development site on Endeavour Ave in Hamilton, which had received backlash from the community, was the only one where a third of the homes had been earmarked as private housing. The Kaingaroa's Homes and Communities General Manager of Strategy, Finance and Policy, Gareth Stevens, said the contracting of further Kaingaroa social housing projects was currently under assessment, but some would still go ahead. As we hear more news about the local examples here in Palmerston North Manawatū, I will let you know. So how have they been going? Well, since 2023, Kaingaroa has completed 4,864 new state houses and an extra 3,641 under construction and on track to be delivered. So that's good news. CoreLogic property economist Kelvin Davidson said while social housing played an important role, it was only a small part of the overall housing market. Just because Kaingaroa puts a freeze on its housing program doesn't mean houses won't be built. They might just be built by the private sector or other people, or it could be that they're funded in other ways. Those resources that were going to be put towards building state houses could be put towards other houses. The builder will still be looking for work, so they might just build other properties. Davidson said there wasn't a shortage of private rental properties at the moment, and the rents were tailing off, so people who might have been destined for state houses might be able to find other options. That's a pretty, wide-reaching comment, and I'd just say to that that it's more a case of where you are as to where that demand is. So they then show a list of all the different ones there, and there is a little bit more detailed here. The Church Street development, which you may have noticed in Palmerston North, that was going to be 63 properties, so we'll just have to see how that goes. So they're not saying they're off the table, they're just saying that they're being reviewed, and fingers crossed we still get those sites up and going. Remember, more housing overall means less demand, which means rental prices can stabilise or come down, which means house prices can potentially stabilise and come down in the very big picture of things. But we'll have to see how that goes. And that's all we've got time for this week on Property Matters. It's been lovely having your company here on MPR. Manawatū People's Radio has produced this. Thank you so much to the team at Manawatū People's Radio. You can also listen to this. Just find it on any podcast that you'd like to listen to. Just search for Greg Watson and Property Matters. You can subscribe to that, or you can just come back to the MPR site anytime you need to listen to some of our back episodes. Thanks again, and we'll catch up with you in a week's time.
If you enjoy this MPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.mpr.nz/donate.